Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Geekery in General podcast. I am your host, Al, from Point of Insanity Games Studio. Now, this is going to be an impromptu, off-the-cuff kind of episode. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to get a proper episode of either Geekery in General, Creepypasta Theater, or Strange and Interesting set for this week because just this last weekend, I was a vendor at a gaming convention, so I was just so busy getting set up for that. Unfortunately, I just wasn't able to get a normal podcast episode set up. The topic of today's episode is going to be a little bit more relevant to any listeners out there who are either independent game designers or publishers who run games at conventions, or maybe if any of you out there are actually thinking of becoming a game designer and publishing a game, and maybe you want to go run games at a convention sometime, you might find some of this information to be helpful. So the convention I was at was EverCon in Wausau in central Wisconsin. This convention gets its name from one of the local schools, DC Everest High School. The reason it's called EverCon is because originally the convention took place at the school itself. But over the years, it just kept growing and growing. And I think like about 10 years or so ago, they decided that they just couldn't do it at the school anymore because, like I said, it just got too big for that particular location. A while ago, they moved it to the, I think it's called the Central Wisconsin Convention and Expo Center. The Gamers Club is still involved with the convention, though. They do volunteer work there. They help run games. They help keep things moving. And also during the convention, there's a silent auction with the proceeds usually going to a charity. This is one of my favorite conventions to go to. I mean, personally, I do like a little bit of the smaller to maybe medium-sized conventions because you get to know people there and it's not as crowded as larger conventions like Gen Con or Origins, or I think GaryCon and GameholeCon are supposed to be pretty big too. I haven't been to those conventions, but like I said, I understand they're major conventions. So it is nice when you go to these smaller ones because you see a lot of the same people, you get to know them, they get to know you, so you develop a little bit more of a rapport with each other. Now, the idea for this episode came from a conversation I had with a friend of mine who I ran into at the game convention. He did a demo game by another game company, and I'm not going to mention the name because I don't want to be perceived as attacking this other game company. And honestly, I have met the guys who run this company at a couple other conventions, and you know, I've talked to them a little bit here and there, and they seem like a couple nice guys, so I don't want to say anything bad about them. Plus, I've never played their actual system, so I can't say anything about it from a hands-on perspective. But he was a bit upset about this game that he played in. And one of the reasons why is because of a exchange he had with one of the designers. See, the particular game system, it's a fantasy game that's supposed to harken back to the days of old school Dungeons and Dragons. So think back to like basic D&D or Advanced Dungeons and Dragons First Edition. They pitch it as being a lethal, old-school style fantasy game. And that's perfectly fine. I mean, if you want to develop a game where a first-level character could hypothetically be killed because they cut themselves shaving or they were scratched by a cat, well, that's fine. There are people who enjoy those types of games. But the thing that he had a problem with was the adventure that they took him on. So what the guy running the demo did is he started out and just put the character sheets down and told them everyone to just pick one. So he found a character that he thought he liked to, he could play. It was an archer, fighter type character. And then after everyone got settled in and got ready to go, it was something like, the way he described it, it's like you walk into a clearing in the woods and all of your stuff disappears. When I heard that, I thought, you know, that sounds more like something that an inexperienced game master in middle school would do when running a game. So I thought that was a little strange. And when he had brought it up to the designer, I think the guy said something like, well, it's because, you know, we want to keep players, you know, in the dark about what happens, and or it was something to that effect. And he also said he didn't like the system itself because he thought there was too much rolling, where it's like, if you have this particular skill and you try this action, you roll, you know, once on this chart. But if you have this particular skill or stat, you know, you roll twice on, you know, you roll once on this chart and once on this chart. So he thought that from a game mechanic standpoint, it just seemed a bit overly complex. And his opinion was that since the designers are, you know, older gentlemen, that he thought they're probably used to a specific style of Dungeons and Dragons, and they think that everyone likes these types of games. Now, I'm not going to get too much into the current state of game design theory in RPGs with traditional game design versus more modern game design trends. That's not really relevant to the topic I wanted to discuss today. And honestly, I do see the point that my friend was making, because, you know, when you are giving a game demo at a convention, it's because you want people to hopefully enjoy your game and purchase it. So when you do these convention demos, it's the epitome of the phrase, put your best foot forward. So if you're part of a company, you want to make sure that the person who's giving these demos is really enthusiastic about the product, first of all, because, well, if the game designer doesn't think much of their own game, what does that say about it? And also, you want to get someone who is going to be extremely adaptable and flexible, because, well, as anyone who's ran a game of any role-playing game can tell you, players have this habit of doing things that you totally did not expect and thus had to find a way to improvise on the spot. And hopefully I'll remember to share a story, because I actually had that happen to me this last weekend. But to get back to the main topic, I think that the way my friend described it, it sounds like that would not be a very good first impression of this particular game system, because, you know, as a player trying to learn how to play this game to see if it's something he wants to invest money in, it didn't seem like the system was really to his liking, and it sounds like he wasn't really too impressed with the response that the designer gave. But overall, the game designer seemed to take the criticism fairly well, which I can tell you is extremely important. If someone tells you they don't like a product of yours, then the last thing you want to do is start getting into a yelling match with them and start insulting them, especially at a game convention. You just got to learn to kind of take it in stride. Now, I'd like to compare his experience to an experience I had. There was another game company there, and I do not remember the name of the company, but the game they created is called Universal Horizons. And one of the designers I talked to said it's a universal type system where you can use it for science fiction, you can use it for fantasy, you can use it for horror, whatever you decide you want to use it for. And we were talking in the exhibit hall. It was, you know, maybe about 40, 45 minutes before it opened. So they invited me to do a little demo of their game. And it was a neat idea what he had. I'm not sure if there's a technical term for this, but for all intents and purposes, they created a diorama to represent the scenario. And the gentleman was explaining that he used old hairdryer parts to create, it was either like an engine room or a generator room for, I think he said it was a spaceship, but I'm not 100% sure on that. It had a really neat, really visually appealing setup that, you know, made you wonder, okay, what's going on here? And, you know, just something like a short 10-15 minute scenario that you can play at a booth in the vendor hall is actually a pretty good idea, because, you know, sometimes if you got someone walking around and someone's maybe interested in a game, you know, give them like a, you know, short 15 minute or so scenario, and that'll give them a chance to decide if it's something they want to look into further. So the scenario was this. We had our party. They were on one end of the generator room, and then we could see that there was a generator that had caught fire. There was a pack of large spiders. There was also a mutant six-legged rat in this room, and there was someone who was escaping out the other side. So basically, we had to get from one side of the room to the other. And the way that the party, you know, worked, you know, was interesting. The way the system worked is, you know, it allowed you, when you were taking your turn, to do things like, you had like an observation phase, I think they called it, where as like a free action, you could kind of look around and try to, you know, make a skill check to size up the situation or try to plan your next move. And that actually came in handy because one of the other players was an animal trainer, and they noticed that the pack rat, the six-legged pack rat, seemed to be starving. So we decided, okay, we'll try to befriend it. And the person managed to successfully offer food to this mutant pack rat, and we got it to help us in the fight. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to finish the scenario because I had to get to my booth and start opening for business that day. But it was a fun experience. My only real criticism from that particular experience with the game is they explained the rules as we went. They didn't really say, okay, here's how you play the game, here's your character sheet. They told me a little bit about what some of the stuff meant, but, you know, it was more as a, okay, now that we're at this point, this is what this means, this is what this means. You know, so that's not my preferred way to learn how to play a new game system. My personal preference is just, okay, explain how to play it before we begin. But still, the people there were nice, and it had a really nice introductory scenario because it was simple, it was quick, and the person did a really good job at setting the stage. So it wasn't like, okay, you walk into a room and boom, now all of your equipment is gone. Oh, and by the way, there's a bunch of mutant spiders that are about to attack you. So this got me thinking, what makes a good convention demo scenario that you can do to get people interested in your game, whether it's a game you developed, or sometimes I've ran into people who they didn't have any part in creating the game. Instead, they were just running it as a favor for a friend because they knew someone who was involved in the game's creation. So as I said before, this is something where you're putting your best foot forward, because as they say, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And if someone plays a game at a convention and they don't like how it was run, or the game master left a bad taste in their mouth, that could potentially turn them off from that game, you know, for the rest of their lives. So I would say probably the best introductory scenarios are going to be ones that are simple. Now, if you have an established system like Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder that has, you know, been around a while and most people in the RPG hobby know what it is, then I think you don't necessarily have to go and do something, you know, simple. In that case, if you're going to run a demo or a game at a convention, you know, by all means, do whatever you want. It's just that it's trickier when you're working with new games. Because if you've seen the price of role-playing game core books nowadays, usually your average hardcover, full-color core rule book can go for anywhere from about, you know, $45 to, you know, $50 or more. And let me tell you, few things suck more than spending $50 on a game and then deciding that you don't like it, Or another unfortunate problem is sometimes you'll dump a lot of money into buying a game system, but then none of your friends are interested in playing it, so it just sits on your bookshelf until you end up selling it to, you know, a used bookstore, or it finds its way out into the table at a rummage sale. When you are doing a demo in order to introduce people to a new game system, that's why I think it's important to keep the scenario simple, because remember, the players, if they've never played the game before, they're really going to have to focus on learning the rules and getting the hang of things. So something simple like escape this room or defeat this, you know, party of bandits, perfectly acceptable for this type of scenario. Also, I would avoid using anything too tricky or too complex, because again, you're probably going to have these players who've never experienced the system before asking a lot of questions, and since they're still getting used to the system, you probably don't want to introduce them to the game using a scenario that's going to require a lot of advanced skill applications, because again, they might not really understand what some of these skills mean and how they are truly meant to be used in the game. So that's actually one reason why I can understand why my friend was frustrated when he did that game demo and the first encounter, you know, boom, all your equipment's gone, because now, okay, you've got a list of skills, and if you're not necessarily sure what they're supposed to do, that can be very frustrating, because this is something I'm guilty of as well, and this is why it's extremely important to play test anything whenever you're developing a role-playing game, because as the creator, you know how it's supposed to work. You know, as the author of that adventure, you know what needs to be done, so something that might be extremely obvious to you might not be as obvious to someone who's maybe a newer player or someone who's new to your game system entirely. So the last thing you want to do is throw an encounter at them that is more likely to frustrate them and make them want to walk away from the table than it is to actually keep them engaged and, more importantly, keep them entertained. And that's one thing that I found from my experience doing demos of the games that I've written is usually it's best if you do encounters that can be played within about the span of 2 to 3 hours, maybe 3.5 at most, but ones that have a good mix of role-playing, problem-solving, and combat, because it is good to get a little bit of combat in there, because that's going to help them learn the game mechanics, and, you know, it's going to keep them entertained. You know, most players I've met do like combative encounters, as long as they're fair, they're balanced, and they're not struggling to understand what the game mechanics are. Role-playing encounters are usually good as well because, to be honest, you really don't have to have any experience with a role-playing game system to do a good job with a role-playing-based encounter. I mean, I'm sure if I took someone who, you know, maybe was an actor or who had experience in theater or drama but never played a game in their life and, you know, had them do a role-playing encounter, they would probably enjoy it and probably do a good job because, you know, they're in that mindset where they're, you know, they're getting themselves into the character's shoes and they're trying to think of how that character would react in this situation. So in times like that, you know, just talking the way through the situation instead of reducing everything down to dice rolls, you know, can be a very fun and rewarding experience. Puzzle-based encounters are a good choice for a demo adventure as well. Now, they can be a mixed bag, though, because in my years of running games, both the ones I've written and running games like Dungeons & Dragons, I've had situations where I've had fairly simple puzzles and the party takes, you know, 20 minutes to solve it. On the other hand, I've also come up with, well, what I thought were pretty difficult puzzles, and they managed to solve it within 3 or 4 minutes. So that's the only reason that puzzles are really a mixed bag. But it is nice because it does directly engage the players And it's something where you don't have to be intimately familiar with the rules in order to resolve that particular encounter. Just as an example, in one of the demos I ran this last weekend, as well as I've run it a couple other times for different groups, there's a encounter where the players have to unscramble a series of letters in order to create a password. Now, fortunately, it hasn't taken too long so far. I've had most groups be able to solve it within, you know, about 5 minutes or less. So that's, I think, ideal. If you can come up with a puzzle that, you know, takes maybe between 5 to 10 minutes, it's a nice little break from combat. And, you know, some people really like solving those puzzles, so they find it relaxing. And it's, you know, just helps keep interest in the game, because you're showing that your game isn't all about going into a combat, killing things, and then making skill checks. Now, I mentioned before that one of the reasons that someone who runs demos has to be flexible is because you never know what players are going to do. And I had that experience this last weekend as well. One of the role-playing games I've written is Caught in the Backrooms, and I've talked about it a little bit a while ago. I wrote it with my friend Chad, and right now I'm working on the third book for it, which will cover some more of the monsters that you can fight in the backrooms. So what I've been doing is, when I can, I've been playtesting these encounters, these new monsters I'm developing, or that I'm adapting from the Backrooms wiki site. I'm testing them to make sure that they are working the way that I'm envisioning. Because I've had a couple encounters where it's like, okay, this particular type of creature, I think I needed to beef it up a little bit. And I had one monster that wiped out the party in 3 rounds. So it's like, okay, maybe we should tone that one down a little bit. Now, for over the weekend, I was testing some of these entities that I adapted from the wiki site. The first one are called Lighthouse Ghouls. So these are found on a backrooms level called the Lighthouse, where it's this lone lighthouse on a island in the middle of an ocean. And the, you know, as you go to this island and try to approach the lighthouse, you're attacked by these ghouls. They don't inflict damage. All they do is they just try to hold you in place. Because after they hold you in place, a couple rounds later, the beam from the lighthouse comes down and disintegrates you. Well, unfortunately, I made these ghouls a little too strong, and the first time I went, I accidentally wiped out the whole party. But the players still had fun, and so what I did is I did a couple quick revisions, played the encounter again, and it was much more balanced than the previous encounter was. But I think the most fun I had in that session, there's an entity on the Wikidot backroom site called the Junk Hunk. Basically, they look like old rusty cars from days gone by. However, they're actually entities that need to eat flesh in order to survive. So what happens is, when they see people approaching them, they move into attack, and they can be armed with guns or flamethrowers or saw blades. So they are meant to be pretty tough. And one of the players did actually die in this particular encounter. But when I say you have to be flexible, what one of the players decided to do is she decided to try to climb in to the car because, well, it looks like a car. It's just, it needs to eat meat to survive. So that forced me to come up with some new rules on the spot because, well, this player did have a good creative idea. It's not something I personally would have thought of, but she played it really well. And, you know, we did a little bit of role playing, and, you know, we did do a few dice rolls to determine if she succeeded or not. But eventually the party was able to defeat the Junk Hunk with only losing one party member. So the encounter went well, the players had a blast, and I also had a lot of fun running it as well. So those are some of my insights on creating a game or a demo to run at a convention. Thanks again for listening, and have a wonderful day. You have been listening to a presentation of Point of Insanity Game Studio. Visit us on the web at poigamestudio.com. Follow us on Twitter at poigamestudio. Look us up on Facebook and email us at poigamestudio@gmail.com.